local programming with us. That's right. 7 hours coming at you, but we'll take you until 1. Murph and Andy, 1 to 3 in the drive with Heather and Sean from 3 until 6. BMW Des Moines guest list shapes up like this. At the bottom of the hour, we'll recap the Masters with our friend Matt Rudy from Golf Digest. He'll stop by at 11:30. Take a look at that. Maybe a brief sneak ahead to the second of the majors, the PGA in Louisville, Valhalla the scene this year. So Matt Rudy at 11:30, 12:05, Matt Snyder, his normal Monday spot, talking Major League Baseball. And then Scott Dockerman on the Hawks and the Big Ten. He'll join us at 12:30. Alec Bussey, who normally joins us on Monday, will be with us tomorrow as Matt Campbell has a press conference scheduled for about 12:30 this morning, and thought, you know what, let's push him back a day so we can recap what Campbell said with Bussey tomorrow, as both Iowa and Iowa State begin their final weeks of spring football. Both will culminate this weekend with some sort of a spring game, but you'll be able to get some eyeballs on both the Clones and the Hawks. Trent's plays of the day before we get out of here. One, they are sponsored by Circus Sports. We're 1 week from this morning. I'll be waking up.
Wow.
Very excited.
Yes.
Very excited. Anyways, good to see you. How was your weekend?
Pretty good. You know, overall, tons of Masters, had a lot to do around the house. Weekend without a softball tournament, as we had one the weekend previous and have one coming up next weekend. So it was a lot of going around the house. And my wife, for the final 6 weeks of the school year, she has to teach in a classroom again. And a long time subbing, and so she was getting her new classroom ready.
Oh, nice.
So it was me and the kids all weekend long, Dad out in the yard doing a lot of work, got the sprinkler out for the kids, running around in that, and listening a lot to the Masters, which overall
was boring, Trent.
Kind of a dud.
It was boring.
Yeah.
There was no intrigue. Maybe a little, but I never felt like, you know, he's going to blow this.
No, absolutely not. That was a money-making opportunity.
Yeah.
And I kept adding more and more to the live betting.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. I think I probably added another 68 units overall.
Wow.
Both Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on Scheffler.
What was the best price you had him at yesterday? Because he fell behind for a minute.
And I never jumped aboard at that point because I was pretty heavily in.
Uh-huh.
But, excuse me. Yesterday morning, I think it was -114 was the price that I got before kind of the leaders teed off. I think that was the price that he was going into the final round with a one-shot lead. So even with that, he's a machine.
He is. He's a boring machine. He's really, I mean, he's the best golfer in the world right now. Right now, I mean, there's a reason he's the world's number one, right? And he can make every shot in his bag. I guess putting was a weakness, but boy, now that seemingly has gone away, I mean, Jesus.
And he had three putts that were very makeable that he missed throughout the course of the tournament. He's just so much
But
better.
Every drive, good.
Yes.
You know, his approach shot's good. It's just going to be how close does he get it? I mean, gets himself out of trouble. He's boring.
Yes. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
And when we look at what's coming up with
Although,
the PGA.
You know, can I just say something just to stop for a second?
Yeah.
Even when Tiger was running away with these and winning by double, I didn't feel bored.
Right, right.
When Scheffler's just taken it to this group of players, it was just yesterday's like, in fact, you know what, Trent? There was a time I watched the Cubs in the eighth and the ninth turned away from the Masters in the final hour of coverage because it was a foregone conclusion. It seemed at that point, well, how many is he going to win by?
Right. And I did the same thing. I flipped on a little NBA. Because of the final regular season day and the way that they set it up with 15 games.
You know, I think that was a pretty good move on the NBA's part.
Really good. You know, there's been plenty of
times.
Now,
unfortunately, the Masters up against it. But,
yeah.
Right.
But what are you going to do, right?
Right.
It's
no,
just
I
the
know.
Way the calendar breaks it and you go that route. But from what they did this season with the in-season tournament, both of us, what are they doing?
Yeah.
It worked. Going back to this new way of getting the teams into the playoffs with the 7 through 10 seeds.
Now, see, I love this.
And initially, I was like, it was hard to understand initially.
Right.
And the way they kind of laid it out, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And now that you get it, you understand it, it's great.
It is.
It's a great idea.
Yep.
And I think maybe some more leagues should be looking at implementing something like that and adding a little bit of intrigue in the one-and-done scenarios that you have.
Now, the NHL's talking about it.
Are they?
Yeah.
And they should.
And it's not going over well.
Well.
But you know, what's change?
Yes, absolutely. And change is difficult.
It's absolutely difficult.
But the
and
NBA,
you
is,
see it.
And, it's a sport and a league that is willing to take chances.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most
part, is it all Adam Silver?
I think so. I think he's got
to get a pretty good commish, hasn't he? Is he the best commissioner?
Well, it's not Bettman.
No. No, it's not Manfred.
It's not Manfred. It's not Goodell. Yeah, it is.
I think probably by default.
Right. Exactly. I mean,
but if you ask the owners, Goodell would say, or the NFL owners would say, yeah, Goodell's terrific.
Right.
But
there are two factions.
Right. More than just you 32 over there.
Because the players love Silver.
Yeah.
As much as we've seen, I think a player's organization love a commissioner.
Adam, the owners have to love him.
Absolutely. And what's going to happen with their next TV deal? Which
players hate Goodell for the most part because he's the judge and jury when it comes down to suspensions and fines.
Fans hate both MLB and NHL.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there's no love lost on either side on that one. Yeah, I don't think it's close.
No, I don't either.
Moynihan with the PGA. Woof.
Yeah.
Everybody hates that guy.
Yeah, that's true.
You go down. I heard this weekend, the WNBA commissioner.
I have no idea who it is.
I don't know what her name is. I know nothing outside of this. Her background, she came in, her last job was the CEO of the Girl Scouts of America.
Really?
Now, yeah, again, I don't know if she has any kind of sports background. If she doesn't, though, and we talked about the importance as we get ready for tonight, the number one pick with Caitlin Clark and the chance.
By the way, how excited are you for your draft party?
Oh, it's... Ella already asked. Yeah, we're watching.
No, you really are having a draft party.
We're not having a party. Right. We'll have it on, and we're not going to be alone.
No,
I would love to know what the best number that they've ever got. I think it was 2004.
For the WNBA draft?
That was the highest rated.
Yeah.
Is this going to be three, four, five
times? See, I don't even think I'll watch a minute of it.
You're not even going to watch the number one. You know who number one's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. I'll see it on Twitter.
Well.
If there's
you don't
a good
want to see that moment, though?
I don't know.
See the interview with her afterwards?
I'll see it.
You'll see it, yeah.
I mean, it's a foregone conclusion.
You live on Twitter, though.
I do, and it may be up there instantly after that. By the way, we'll get in more of this in a minute. We forgot to mention the bonus bucks are back.
Oh, yeah.
Very excited about this. It's you know the drill. We did have a winner. In fact, you and I had a winner, did we not?
We did, yes.
Last time this promotion ran, it's same deal. You know, when we go to our first break, which is supposed to be 20 after, but it never is, we'll let you know that it's time to, we'll give you the bonus, the keyword. You run to KXNO.com, enter it, and perhaps you can win $1,000. So I was really impressed by Saturday Night Live. Not that she blew everybody away.
No.
But she felt comfortable. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem forced. And she'll get better at these things, as everybody does. Like, Kurt Warner couldn't finish a sentence when we first started interviewing when he was a barnstormer. It was embarrassing.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have him on because... You know,
it was that bad.
It was that bad.
Yeah.
Now look at him.
Right. NFL Network. Right. I think a guy that could have a bigger role
if
he wanted. I think he is excellent as a color commentator on football games when he does those NFL Network games.
Oh, he's great.
A lot of times he's stuck with Eisen, who isn't a great play-by-player.
Yeah.
And he's really, really good in that role. I think he's done some Westwood One stuff. Mm-hmm. He's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a guy that couldn't do it. And Caitlin Clark, to step on that stage with a big-time comedian.
See, I had no idea about the back. I don't watch Saturday Night Live.
And I do.
Right.
I still.
So this guy that was sitting beside her hates women's sports. Is that it?
Yeah, lots of jokes. Michael Shea. Yeah,
okay.
There's been plenty of them throughout the years. They played a few of them in the clip. And yeah, I mean, that's just one of the many bits that he has is making fun of that. And she went right back at it. And I thought she did a tremendous job.
Yeah, me too. And I love the fact her teammates were there. She brought them on the stage.
She's hanging out there.
Yeah.
And talk about, you understand. Kate Martin, they've been around forever. And Gabby Marshall, you understand that. Jada Jimfey, young lady that started her career at Urbandale, finished up at Johnston. Man, she is making the most of this, isn't
she? Why wouldn't she?
She doesn't play.
Uh-uh.
She, we'll see. Now she becomes an upperclassman. If she's
but
gonna
she's
fight
obviously
a few
very popular teammate. Yes.
Well, and we saw the play where Martin got hurt. I can't remember what game it was where she went over and like give her a kiss on the cheek, you know, and it's going to be okay. She's just that kind of teammate, right? Yeah. Everybody seems to love her. Talk about being along for the ride, though.
Ooh.
That is a good one. Yeah. You're a sophomore and you're going through that.
Opening doors that'll never be open to open to very few people in the first place, and certainly the likelihood that you ever get to step through there again is pretty minuscule. Who's the highest, regardless of sport, what Iowan is the highest? Is it Gallery who went two? I mean, has there ever been an Iowan go number one in their sport?
I don't believe so. You've talked about the Canadian draft with Kenny Plain.
Yep.
But I don't think we've had a number one overall pick. Baseball, no.
Bob Feller, but was there even a draft back then?
I mean, we're talking about a completely
different era. In the 30s?
Let's say in our lifetime.
Okay.
Let's make it that way.
Well, there's been no NHL player.
No.
We've seen some top. Where did Ricky Davis go? I mean, he
was
the
like
first
23.
Okay.
Yeah.
We know Gallery went 2.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Warner, no.
Right.
I think this is going to be history tonight for that, right? And Iwin has never gone first overall.
Did Alex Karras?
First overall? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
That would be about the only one that would even jump to mind of thinking, let's see, he was the 10th pick.
Okay.
In the 1950 draft. Yeah, probably highest ever, right?
Gallery 2 right now is where the bar is. Come on, we got to be missing. Are we missing something?
Pfizer was what, number 3?
No, yeah, but I mean, born and raised in
born
the state.
Born and raised in Iowa.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No. Maybe somebody can help us out.
Yeah. Anyways, we will let you do that if you indeed know the answer. If there ever has been an Iowan, and regardless of sport, that goes through the draft process and would have been the number one overall pick. I don't think that there is. But as is normally the case on this program from 11 to 1, there's plenty of opportunities to correct this, and we certainly give you those. Let's get Mark in here first of all. Mark is up first. Mark, welcome. How are you?
Doing great. Beautiful day on a Monday.
Yes, indeed. But buckle up because it's about to change.
I know. I heard. So, is it tonight or tomorrow?
Tonight. Tonight into tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay. Good enough. All right. This might be a little out there, but I believe, and you guys threw me a curveball about your talking about actual native Iowans, but I believe a Hawkeye football player by the name of Mike Haight was the number one pick in some USFL draft.
Okay. All right. Mike, so what year are you talking?
Oh,
70s, 80s? If it was USFL, no, that'd be the 80s.
Let's say 88. I'm driving. I can't Google it.
Yep, I got it here. Mike Haight was the first overall pick in the 1986 USFL draft by the Orlando Renegades.
Do you remember Mike Haight, Mark?
I remember Mike Haight.
I don't.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if he was an Iowan. Does that say Trent?
He grew up was born in Manchester. Yep.
We're going to give it to him.
There you go.
There you go.
Dyersville Beckman High School.
If you need any more useless information, I'm your guy.
Mark's the guy.
Mark's the man.
Yeah.
Here's another one.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Randy Duncan was the number one overall pick in the 1959 draft. Of course, played at Roosevelt.
Yep.
Was born in Osage.
There's
he's
your
great
answer,
then.
Randy Duncan.
An Osage native, Randy Duncan.
He took over for Kenny Plain. Weren't they in the same Iowa team?
Yeah, they would have been. Yeah. Definitely matches up
late
there.
Late 50s? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Randy Duncan. Oh, the phones were their phones just went dead.
Yes, because everybody had
everybody
that
knew one. Everybody knew Randy Duncan. That's good.
Duncan. NFL career did not go very well for Mr. Duncan.
I wonder what he got to sign as the number one overall pick.
$500.
Yeah.
One touchdown, 3 interceptions.
And who
NFL
drafted
career.
Him?
He was drafted number one overall by early years, college career, professional by the Packers. Never played for the Packers. Went to the CFL with the BC Lions.
I don't remember that.
He later explained that was Green Bay before Vince Lombardi, and Canada offered a lot more dough.
At the time they did. Yeah, at the time. In fact, when I was a kid, there would be a time at the end of the year where the CFL All-Stars would play the NFL All-Stars, mm-hmm. and the CFL would win.
What?
Yes.
Did they play
not every week?
Those
I mean, not every
rules?
Year. You know, I don't remember that, Trent. Yeah. I don't remember the answer to that part. But, yeah, good. Randy Duncan. Well, so there's our answer. So Caitlin Clark tonight will join Randy Duncan as the only native Iowans, we think, to go number one overall.
We'll see what else we can find.
Or our listeners will
yes,
find for
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. Yeah, Bob Feller, there would have been a draft in the... I mean, how did players get assigned to teams back in the day?
Let's bring up the wiki page for old Bob Feller. See what pops up here. Born November 3rd, 1918. Early life, at Van Meter High School.
Van Meter, yeah.
By the age of 16, possessed what critters judge a high-quality fastball. Major League scouts traveled to Dayton to watch him at a national baseball tournament. After the game, several big league clubs offered signing bonuses, and he signed with the Indians.
So that's how it is.
You go to a scouting combine.
And your pockets are full of money, and you take the best offer, if indeed there are multiple offers. I had to...
Different world.
It was a different world. And speaking of a different world for Bob Feller, this is a guy that took the prime of his career and mm-hmm. went to serve his country.
Yes.
Which is remarkable. Some of the Hall of Fame career that this dude put together. When did he pass? What year was it? Has it been 10 years ago?
14.
Has it been 14 years now?
2010, December of 2010.
Mm. Well, anyways, good stuff on Caitlin Clark, and thank you to our listeners, who are obviously brighter than the hosts here most days, and today being
doesn't
no
take
different.
A ton.
No, Randy Duncan went to Roosevelt, huh?
Yes. Is that an Osage, though? Come on, give a little credit to the Green Devil Country.
Now, how did he get to Roosevelt? Does the family move here?
Well,
so Roosevelt was of the Des Moines schools.
Mm-hmm.
Are there more? Now, this isn't a sports topic.
Okay. Oh, you're just talking about
more.
Yeah,
more famous
alumni.
Yeah, have gone through Roosevelt and in to like East or North or Lincoln.
All right, we got a list here
of Roosevelt alum.
Yes. Lolo Jones. You know that one.
Sure. She's coming to the Drake Relays.
I saw that. Natasha Kaiser Brown.
Okay. Yep.
Cloris Leachman. I love that.
Uh-huh.
Let's see what else we got in here. Don't know many of these names. Robert Ray, of course, former governor for a long time here in the state. And then
when was he governor? 70s?
Hoot Gibson, former professional basketball player. Don't know who. Nate Green, Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year in 2000, an NBA referee.
Nate Green's an NBA referee?
I don't know if he still is. Maybe he just got a cup of coffee. Let's see here. Da, 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 2008. Now works as an NBA official, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, that's cool.
I didn't realize that one either.
Did not know that. Back to the Masters for just a second. Uh-huh. Your thoughts on Vern Lundquist's goodbye. Did you hear it? We happened to be listening to it when Nance read a chapter from, or not a chapter, the final sentence from the book called Play by Play that Vern Lundquist wrote and the sign-off.
There's a part of Jim Nance that annoys me.
That's not it.
These are the things that he's at his best.
Isn't he great at it? Yeah, I agree.
This is his element.
Yep.
This is a golf, yep. The Masters.
Yep.
Those kind of things, the corniness, the goofiness.
Mm-hmm.
They play so well,
yep.
In this spot. And I thought they knocked it out of the park.
Now, I did
overall,
too.
I think maybe the coverage struggled a little bit.
Well, they didn't have much of a tournament to sell.
That was part of it when there were things that were cropping up. Bryson playing just incredibly slow.
Yeah.
They don't normally do that anyway at the Masters.
At the Masters, right.
But it felt like they were holding back because mm-hmm. they just wanted Vern to have his moment.
Mm-hmm.
The picture of him and Tiger just... With Tiger on the green.
Where you didn't... Oh, Stan? Yes. And he was sitting on like a little stool or something.
Right.
Oh, that was phenomenal, that picture.
And then the other picture where you just see Vern's arm
yeah.
reaching out.
So have you seen somebody on Twitter? Did you see what somebody did?
The meme?
Yes.
With the picture of Tiger's car side by side into the tree.
Yes.
Side by side.
And then Tiger shaking hands with the tree. That's just phenomenal. I mean, whoever came up with that, A, you're incredibly warped.
Yeah,
but
right.
Boy, you're incredibly good.
Well, I got a chuckle out of that.
Oh,
one.
It was funny.
Oh,
it was funny.
Really, really good. But Vern,
yeah.
He is a voice of my lifetime, a voice of my youth.
Yes.
You think of the big moments, Kentucky Duke,
right.
The Elite Eight game, the Christian Leitner shot,
the SEC football.
Absolutely. Tiger on 16.
Oh.
The chip with the Nike symbol on the ball just hanging for
How much was that worth to Nike at that particular moment? I mean, any part of the golf ball could have been hanging
right.
there, but no, perfect. Right in the middle of the shot was the Nike logo. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
With Jack
yes.
in 86. That was incredible. Saw Nicklaus and Vern Lundquist relived that as part of the coverage from this last week. And they didn't reenact it. They just, you know, they interviewed. That was terrific, I thought. But to your point, one of the voices of our sports lifetime for mm-hmm. everybody, right?
Right. And doing it.
Oh, my God.
At a high level.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it in important games, what, NFL for a long
yeah.
time.
Was he a Dallas reporter? Is
yes.
that the story?
Yeah. I saw a picture of him in his, like, must have been in his 20s. Did not look like Uncle Vern does today.
No, I bet.
And the way certainly I know him is the big, you know, jovial guy that,
yeah.
that Vern was. He was a strapping young man mm-hmm. looking good out
was
there.
Was he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was like, that's Vern Lundquist? Right. But it was.
Speaking of pictures of people you haven't seen for a while, did you see Clint Eastwood's picture this weekend?
No.
Woo.
Not doing well?
Looks like a hermit.
Well.
Long gray hair, hasn't shaved for years by the looks of things.
He's got money to
he's
do it.
He's 93 years old.
Really?
93 years old.
I would have been way off on that guess.
Oh.
If that was the birthday quiz, we did that here on Miller and Condon.
Yeah.
That would have missed by a...
You wouldn't have got the...
I don't even know if I would have been to the 80s. I probably would have guessed like 78.
No, he's got some age. He's been doing a long time. All right, we'll get to the baseball coming up with Matt Snyder. Look forward to that conversation with Matt. Lots of baseball conversation from the weekend. Boy, was there oddity in Seattle yesterday. Did you see how the Cubs game ended?
Yeah, with the pickoff.
but going to replay, the call is over. I mean, talk about anticlimactic, right? You see the play, then you wait and you wait and you wait, and the call is overturned. Alzolay picked off Rodriguez, who was inserted into the game to be a pinch runner. That's awkward.
That one stings.
Yeah.
And I saw, I think it was the first time, I can't remember the year, it was a Sunday night game with the Cubs, though, the last time they won on a pickoff play.
Really?
Joe Borowski.
Got picked off?
No, he was the one that threw it over and picked off the player. I think they were playing the Yankees on Sunday Night Baseball. Like,
really?
Yeah. Made the throw over to first and picked off the runner, and that's how the last time that they won a game in that fashion. Michael Bush, you getting excited?
You have to.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, right? It seemed like that's what are they bringing him over for type of move.
Uh-huh.
But boy, has that worked out so far.
The defense has been better than I thought. The
defense has been great. Dansby Swanson's double play ball that he made last night in the eighth inning.
And they're doing this, obviously, without Justin Steele.
Mm-hmm.
One of the, at minimum, top seven, eight arms in the National League.
I think.
And maybe even higher than that. You have him coming back. I mean, this team isn't set.
Where are they going to put Patrick Wisdom? You see what he's doing down here in AAA?
I saw one of Tommy Burch's tweets about that, and he is ripping the cover off the baseball. There's not a spot.
There's no spot. He's not playing the outfield.
No.
Not playing third base. You got to give Chris Morel those at-bats.
And if Bush is doing this.
And Bush is secure at first.
Look out.
I'm with you. All right, let's do it, Trent Condon. Hi, Miller and Condon, before we put this away for a year, one more time. God, I love this intro. It's really good, isn't it?
It's perfect.
Oh, indeed it is. Let's talk some Masters. Let's recap with our friend Matt Rudy, Golf Digest, long time at Golf Digest. He joins us. Matt, Trent, and Ken, thank you for coming on, Matt Rudy. How are you, sir?
You know, it's 78 degrees here, and the sun's out. And Scotty Scheffler's one of my favorite people in golf, and it's a good day. I can't complain.
Yeah, it was a runaway. You know what, Matt? It's funny. I could watch Tiger Woods win by 8, 10, whatever. I'm not bored for a minute. I watch Scheffler. He's such a machine that I get bored. And I did. Believe it or not, the final couple of holes, I got back on 18 just to see him clinch it, et cetera, to win it. But he's just boring. Is that a fair way to describe him? It seems like that. And he's so damn good.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it is that he takes drama out of tournaments, even more aggressively, I guess, for lack of a better term, than Tiger did, in that he doesn't have a lot of risk in his game. He's relentless about making good decisions. If he gets in trouble, he gets out of trouble. And I think, you know, he plays a lot more like Nicklaus, I think, you know, where he just subtracts drama. And when you add that in to a really kind of stoic demeanor, you know, it was so fun to watch him because he gets such a big smile on his face.
Yeah.
You can tell that he's enjoying himself. That little bit of, you know, charisma and connection is different. You know, Max Homa has some of that charisma and connection too. And I think it's probably unfair to demand it from Scotty in a way that's not the way he's built. But I mean, I've known Scotty since he was 7 years old. And when you're
is that
with
a
him,
fact?
He is a funny, charismatic guy who has a lot of fun. I think he's just picked a demeanor and he's picked an approach that works for him in tournaments. He tries to make them as close to regular as they can be, and you can see the result.
It was a dominating performance, and this is kind of what we expect to see. Putter was bulky a couple of different times, but overall so much better than it's been. In terms of raw talent, we've talked about this. He had just clear-cut. Now, as we go with three majors still left here, I mean, would it be a disappointment if he doesn't put another one in the win column? No, there's a baby on its way, and that's going to change things and maybe change sleep schedule a little bit. Though I think he can afford a pretty good au pair, right? Have a pretty good nanny that's going to help out on that front. On that aside, though, if it just ends with one major this season, is it a disappointing year for Scotty Scheffler?
That's a great one.
That's so interesting, right? Because I've talked about this with you guys for years and years. What Tiger's done, and he did it to Rory, and he did it to Jordan Spieth, and he's done it to a lot of players. It's, the bar is set so high, right?
Yep.
It used to be that if you won, if you had Zach Johnson's career, for example, if you won two majors and you won 14 tour events, that's a Hall of Fame caliber career. And the reality for Scotty is he's had two years where he's won, 10 events and two majors. So it would be hard to say that the rest of the year would be a disappointment if he didn't win one. But on the other side of that coin, he's had one of the top one or two ball striking years in the history of the PGA Tour, over the last 12 months. And ironically, I think I did a book with Johnny Miller, and he said some of the same things that you can kind of hear Scotty say, which is when your ball striking is so good and you hit so many greens, even if you're a mediocre putter or you're having a mediocre stretch with the putter, it feels like you're shooting 1,000 because you're just not capitalizing on what your iron play is giving you. And, Jordan Spieth is kind of the opposite of that. Jordan Spieth has had some mediocre ball striking numbers, but he makes a lot of crazy long putts, and he's getting more out of his ball striking than they would quote unquote deserve. So I think Scotty is very even about this kind of stuff, and I think he wants to win more majors, and I think he's going to keep doing the stuff he's doing. And I don't think he thinks of it as a disappointment any more than, not winning in a given week is a disappointment. I think he's genuinely upset with himself if he doesn't win a tournament. That's why he's so good. The competitiveness is that. But I think objectively speaking, if you've won the Players' Championship and you've won a major, objectively speaking, that is an excellent year by any measure.
This is one of the reasons you're so good, because I think your answer that you gave me about Tiger Woods, and you never know, is he going to get himself in some trouble and have to wiggle his way out of that? Scheffler doesn't do that. And now I want to pick up the other thing you said. I want to go back to when he's 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. I mean, did he live on a golf course? I mean, was he always playing? Take us back to, because I'd never heard this story about him before. Take us back to those years when he's growing up.
So I've been at Golf Digest still. This is my 25th year.
Yep.
So right at the beginning of my tenure, you get assigned coaches to do instruction stuff with. And Randy Smith has been one of my coaches I do stuff with since I started. He's one of my favorite people, one of my best friends in golf. And so I was doing photo shoots with Randy in Dallas in the early 2000s when this persistent little kid would come watch every shoot we did, hit balls in the backdrop, want to ask questions about what we were doing. And Randy always said, this kid is different. This kid is special. The only issue he ever had was he was tiny, 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 tiny.
Huh.
He couldn't hit it as far as the other kids. And so he had to win with guile and win with short game. And all of a sudden, when he got to high school, he grew to be a full-size 6'3" human. So he had little player skills, but all of a sudden could hit the ball as far as everybody else. And you won't find a nicer, more genuine guy than Randy Smith, and you won't find a nicer, more genuine guy than Scotty. And what I like about him, even if he's not the most exciting guy, when you see him speak after winning a major championship, that's the same guy when you're sitting there in the grill room at Royal Oaks in Dallas when he's talking to you on a random Tuesday.
Hmm.
And I really appreciate that a lot, because I'm around players that are not that way.
Right.
So that's a nice place to be, for sure.
So much of the buzz going into something like the Masters, of course, is the pageantry, everything that goes along with it, the beautiful course. But
spectacular.
We also get to see everybody together and with the new LIV Tour and what's happened there. Where are we? After, talking to a lot of people in the golf world and kind of waiting, because you saw Jon Rahm, he was pissed. I mean, in 54 holes and dinking around on muni courses and just not playing in real golf tournaments and not being prepared. I think you can make that argument about it. Where are we? What's the likelihood that we see some kind of merger, because it just makes golf so much better when all the good guys are there?
Yeah.
Isn't Jon Rahm being angry kind of the same as drinking 14 beers and being hung over the next day and being mad?
I mean, he did
sign up for exactly what he got, and he got paid for what he got.
Handsomely.
I think the things that are in the way right now, there's antitrust stuff from the government that needs to get reviewed, and I think there are PGA Tour players saying, whatever we do, there has to be some accounting or reckoning for the players who took the money. Now, does that mean that PGA Tour players get paid something? Does it mean that the players who got LIV money have to kick money in to get back in? I think the resistance is players saying, well, you shouldn't be able to take, you know, $400 million, you know, break up the PGA Tour essentially, and then the next year just go back and play tournaments like that never happened. And so I think, like anything, there's some middle ground that they're going to discover. I think they've probably already discovered most of it, but it's like anything else. You got to have the people review the details. And I think we talked about this early, you know, last week. There's no incentive to say anything now. You might as well just get it set up so that for whatever the next season is, you've got some vision for what that's going to look like.
John Rahm was asked after the tournament just how he was received amongst his peers, and he said for the most part it was positive. You know, some people that he didn't think he had a relationship with came up and gave him a big hug, said it was good to see him. But there was one person who I guess he was pretty close to that he said never even looked at him. I wonder who that would be, Matt Rudy. Any idea?
I heard it could have been Homa. It could have been Patrick Cantlay. It wouldn't surprise me if it was someone like Cantlay, because Cantlay's heavily involved in the policy, you know, the PGA Tour policy board.
Uh-huh.
And to be fair, John Rahm was one of the most outspoken people about how ridiculous 54 holes was,
right,
and you know what he would never want to play in that format. So you can change your mind, and money can change your mind. All those things are perfectly fine. The way business works, there's all kinds of deals that come together with people who hate each other because the deal just got to be too good. I think what you need to do in those circumstances is say, hey, yeah, I realize some people are probably going to be annoyed that I changed my mind and that it is what it is. So complaining about it, I think, is like complaining about 54 holes now. You made the deal. You made the deal. You took the money. And I feel the same way just broadly about professional athletes who make the deal and take the money. I don't think that you can complain about the responsibilities of fandom or, you know, the responsibilities of being a superhero public figure. If you're getting tens of millions of dollars to go play a sport, it's not because you're great at the sport. It's because people want to watch you play the sport. And if you don't participate in the things that, you know, make people want to watch it, then you're going to get static, and you can't be surprised that you're going to get static.
Matt, Tiger Woods told us many times throughout his career he was never going to be a ceremonial guy. Is he a ceremonial guy?
Mm.
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone believes that long-term, if he thinks he's going to barely make the cut, if he is in danger of shooting 80, that he's going to keep showing up and keep doing it. Let's put it this way. I think there might be one moral victory, which is, you know, the first time after something happens and you can come back and play, the moral victory is getting back out there again. But I don't think, you know, finishing 28th, you know, after finishing last this year, I don't think that solves anything for him. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't other business interests that he has that might benefit from him playing golf on occasion. But I'm going to hold off on making a final judgment because this was a brutal week weather-wise.
Yeah.
He had to come back early the next day. The wind was blowing 50 miles an hour. And also, it's a very tough walk. It's probably the toughest walk they have on tour every year. So let's see what happens when he has more rounds under his belt. You know, the Open Championship is always a good place to look because the turf is so cushy, the walks are a little easier, and you can be a shot maker. You know, if he struggles at a tournament like that, then I think we can say, you know what, why don't you go up in the booth or, you know, do something else.
Speaking of being up in the booth, your thoughts on Vern Lundquist, who called his final Masters yesterday?
Well, I'm like everybody. What you want is you want to see something really pivotal happened there so you could hear one more classic call. And I think what it reminds us about is one of the unfortunate realities of golf now is the segmenting of the broadcast into so many different places, whether you're talking about network TV week in and week out or the live broadcast. Just the way golf is broadcast now, we're getting fewer and fewer moments. Not that there aren't great broadcasters, just where everybody's in the same place at the same time listening. You know, what you lose when you watch this wonderful Masters app or you watch it on your computer, I mean, that's a wonderful development. You can watch everybody hit every shot, anything you want. You can see it. But when the broadcast was in a limited window and everybody was watching at the same time, that's what really made those calls that he made, which were wonderful,
yeah,
resonate, because we all heard the same call. So I think it's kind of like Nick Saban retiring, which is
a guy who's a legend is going out at the right time when so much attention is diverted across so many streams.
All right. So we have to mention Ludwig Åberg, because brought him up last summer to you. Ken looked at me like, who the hell are you talking about now? Yeah. Boy, this dude in his first career major, finish alone in second place. He's got a great putt. He's got all the parts. Go to Texas Tech, making the decision. Going to play out in the winds of West Texas. What a decision that was here. I mean, star in the making. What a start here. What's the future of Åberg?
Geez, he's already won 4 professional events. You know, he won a PGA Tour event last year. He won 3 European Tour events. He's been on the Ryder Cup team. He was on a winning Ryder Cup team before he played in his first major.
Wow, that's
so wild. I don't know how you could turbocharge the start of your career any faster. And also, what he has is a lot of charisma, and people enjoy watching him play. Mm-hmm. And it's I think good that we mentioned Max Homa before, because I think similar to Max Homa, not that their games are super similar, it didn't take Max Homa very long to be very popular mm-hmm. on social media and to be someone who at tournaments people love to watch because of how engaging he is. You know, people can relate. When you struggle, they can relate. That's something that's available to Åberg, and that's kind of rare. When you talk about a player that's an international player, usually that's the territory of an American player. But I think a lot like Stevie, you know, there are some charismatic players that American fans relate to, and I think it's proof. I think people are relating to Åberg even more now than even Viktor Hovland, who's been great over the last couple of years, and it just shows that revealing some of your personality and revealing some of your emotions when you're playing any sport, that's a big deal.
Speaking of being out on Tiger, I might be out on Rory. Now we go to Valhalla and the PGA Championship. That was the last major that he won a decade ago, was at Valhalla. I mean, this is the last stand for Rory, isn't it? I mean, I know it's not the last stand. You get what I'm doing, but and in terms of my betting card every week, I can't have him in there if he can't win here.
I can tell you, I was at that PGA Championship, and I'm going to be at this one coming up here in a few weeks. So I can remember what Pete Rory looked like, and I can remember him winning. You know, when he won, dominant fashion. He won PGAs in dominant fashion. He won U.S. Opens in dominant fashion, and I think everyone was talking about the Masters. You know, he's so nervous. He's, you know, this has become so big, trying to win the career Grand Slam. I would argue that the time since he won his last major is a bigger deal than the Masters, you know, the Masters mm-hmm. delay, so to speak. And I think what it really does is it reminds us and it references just how hard majors are to win. You know, so before we get ahead of ourselves and say, you know, people ought to be out there winning one or two majors a year, it is still hard to win majors. If you look at Mickelson, for example, or Brooks Koepka is an outlier. You know, Jordan Spieth and Phil Mickelson and Rory McIlroy, when you look at the number of majors they've won, I mean, those numbers are in line with some of the top 8 or 10 careers in the history of golf. You know, Lee Trevino wasn't winning a major a year. It's just that, you know, the only guys doing that are Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. So, yes, it's frustrating. I'm sure it's frustrating for him. I think you can't underestimate just how distracting his job as the point man for the PGA Tour Live stuff over the last couple of years has been. You know, mm-hmm. you get asked about that every week. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. When you're having your business conversations with people, they're all asking you about that. That takes energy out of you, and I think it takes time to reset that. And there's also an awful lot of good players. There's a lot of good young players. There's a lot of good, rich young players who aren't afraid. It makes it harder to win majors, for sure.
All right, final thing for me. Sorry, I'm kind of taking over here. But Bryson and the weird irons that were what? What's going on here? Now, I'm not going to be able to afford $10,000 irons, but what is happening here with Bryson and getting these things ready to go? I mean, moments before a major begins and you're playing with new irons, just baffling.
I admire his willingness to do things his own way. Just because nobody else did it that way, he says, I'm going to check it, and if I can come up with something that helps me, whether that's gaining 40 pounds of muscle and trying to swing as hard as I can, or getting the bulge and roll on the face of my irons, that's the same as the bulge and roll on a wood to try to get some correction on the face. I admire the fact that he's willing to put crazy irons like that in play at a major.
I mean, there's a lot of players, and Tiger was one of them. If he had to switch his gamer putter or his gamer three wood or his gamer driver, and the specs were identical, if it was even the least bit, you know, off or different, or in his perception was that it was different, he couldn't do it. This is closer to John Daly, where when he signed his Callaway deal, Callaway said, what do you want to, you know, what are your specs? And he said, just send me whatever you want and I'll adapt to it. Now, Bryson is a little more detail oriented than that, but I appreciate the guy who's willing to ask all the questions and do something different.
Matt Rudy, Golf Digest. I just want to see what's at the bottom of Auberg's bag. Boy, he's got some grub stashed away in that thing. Jesus, unbelievable. Matt, we'll talk to you in a month, and you'll be in Louisville. Bardstown on the agenda. Stop through there.
Yeah, I'm gonna do the whole. I'm going to consume as much bourbon as
professionally
possible. Let's put it that way.
Good stuff. We'll talk to you in a month, Matt Rudy. Thanks, as always, for doing this. See you, buddy.
You bet.
Yep, Matt Rudy, Golf Digest. We check in with a longtime guest.
What a character Bryson was this week. I mean, picking up the sign.
Yeah.
Moving that out of the
way. That was unbelievable.
Did you see on Friday there was a group that was taking a long time to get off the green, and he's like...
I tried to shift them away.
Was you know, he's like, "Scoot, get out of there."
Yeah,
Bryson, you know, this one of the slowest guys on the tour. I mean, right. Knock it off. But is he trying to endure?
Yes, I think he is
trying to. Does the hat tip? The hat tip without his hat on his head. I think
he's trying to win us over.
Right.
Again,
it's going to take a while for me.
Yeah, I mean,
when he was bombing him off the tee, he's fun to watch.
He is.
I just like rooting against him, and we need those villains.
Yep.
Those villains are a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Scotty Scheffler is not one of them.
No.
Good stuff out of Matt Rudy. That stuff when he was 7, 8 years old. I had no idea that Rudy knew him that long. I had known him that long. All right, we'll take a time out, come back and finish the hour. Hour number two starts with MLB conversation, as every Monday does with our friend Matt Rudy. Matt Snyder. We just had Matt Rudy. Matt Snyder is the next Matt on the program from CBSSports.com, and then Scott Docterman on the Big Ten and on Iowa. Alec Bussey tomorrow. Matt Campbell has a press conference today at 12:30, so we'll recap that tomorrow with Bussey. Miller and Condon back after these. Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. We take you until noon. Another opportunity to win $1,000 coming up at about 25 or so after noon. Did you, I thought that the NBA and the NHL finals flip-flop networks.
Mm-hmm.
ABC's got both this year.
Oh, really?
Because I guess they got the NBA and they got the NHL this year. So
I did not know that.
A boon, I would imagine, for ABC.
Who's your pick right now? You get one team
in the
Stanley Cup. You got one pick.
Oh, God.
I know you got it covered, but the team that's playing the best, that you have confidence in.
Trent.
I know it's not your team.
No, although they're playing really well.
They got you sucked in.
Oh, my God. They beat Dallas on the road, shut them out, and did the same thing to Colorado.
Didn't they have like 7-1?
7-0 Saturday. Yeah. Carolina.
The
Hurricane.
Huh.
And I bet them every year.
Yeah, you do. I know that.
They're like my Chargers.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm divorced from them.
Right. You got one $100 free roll right now. You're going to put it on the Carolina Hurricanes.
No, I'll probably put it on Colorado because I don't have Colorado.
Okay. That is fine. Okay. How about the NBA? One bet.
It's Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
It's the Nuggets. I think it is. Who would you take?
I think the same thing. The Celtics are a free roll, though, to get out of the East.
I think they are.
The Knicks at the number two seed.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see anything there.
The Nuggets-Celtics exacta that Circa's going to put out, or some of the... It's going to be incredibly low, right?
Are you going to get even 3-1?
I was hoping for 4. You don't think I'll get 4?
Those are going to be out before...
Before you get off the air, potentially.
Yes.
All right, we will take a timeout. Circa's got their draft props up.
Mm.
Drake May over under 5.5. I beg your pardon. J.J. McCarthy over 5.5. Is Michael Penix, you know what his over-under is? 32.5.
Wow.
First round or yay or nay. Hour two next. Miller and Condon, 106.3 KXNO.